Hello, welcome again to Comic Connoisseurs. Tonight we'll be talking about the Ultimates universe, a universe that apparently is going to be winding down very soon. You, of course, know my co-host, JT from Sacratoon.
Excelsior.
And also joining us is a longtime friend. Welcome back, Red Ink.
Greetings and salutations.
All right, and as always, we're going to start with the weekly solicitations. All right, well, we got some... what is this, enormous number 6? What is this?
By 215 Inc.
I do not like this cover. Let's move on. We have Antarctic Press. Antarctic Press, but nothing by Fred Perry, so let's move a little bit further there. Okay, we got some Afterlife with Archie. Sort of lukewarm on that now. Same with Mega Man and Sonic. We got some Avatar Press, nothing really, again, lukewarm at best for me. Got some Boom Studio, Escape from New York number 3, JT.
Honestly, I've been surprised how much I've enjoyed that series thus far. I mean, granted, 2 issues in, but it's, this is a sequel to Escape from New York that isn't Escape from L.A.
Snake!
Oh, wait, wrong snake.
Well, he did say call me Plissken.
Yeah. Let's see, we got here Fall of Cthulhu Omnibus.
Omnibus. Okay, we got some RoboCop number 8. We got Steven Universe. And let's see, we have Lady Death from Boundless Comics.
Is he still around?
Yeah. Apparently, I think Dynamite's got the license now that they had this, like, miniseries called Chaos come out that, like, kind of reintroductions for the characters and, like, these new forms, and they've had, like, Lady Demon, Lady Death, Chastity, Evil Ernie. There's a Smiley... the button one shot. I tried watching the animated movie of Lady Death once and wish there was Mental Bleach.
Well, moving on, speaking of Mental Bleach, we have some Buffy comics, Angel and Faith season 10. We got some Conan volume 16. That's some good stuff there.
Yeah.
And we got Goon. Some Goon, yes. We have,
you ever watch that demo trailer they did for the animated Goon movie that they're supposed to be working on?
It's okay.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Come on. Paul Giamatti is Frankie. Perfect casting? I think so.
We got some DC Comics, and moving on, we have some Dynamite Entertainment with Battlestar Galactica, Death of Apollo, number 3 of 6.
But you're not reading Django Zorro?
It's the wrong Django.
Yes, I suppose Franco Nero probably wanted it a little too big a piece of the pie for that. They got...
there's something classic about that imagery of him dragging this coffin behind him. I mean, it's spaghetti western.
That contains a Gatling gun.
And you didn't know that that's where Trigon got it. That's for shame, JT.
Oh, I'm allowed one or two things. Let's see. They also have... I picked up last week the first issue of the new, like, King Syndicate miniseries. The new Flash Gordon, the new Phantom number 1, which spins out of the King's Crossing and that 8-issue Flash Gordon miniseries they put out, which is some really, dare I say, Dynamite stuff. And so you see this week they got the new Jungle Gyms coming out, new Mandrakes out like next week, I think, which I would definitely suggest to our listeners to check out.
We also got a Shaft number 3.
Damn right.
Shaft.
Just talking about Shaft.
We can dig it. We got, moving further down, we got... We got some IDW with G.I. Joe number 5. Skylanders selling toys for many years now. Transformers, there is more to meets the eye.
With this, you're not going to talk about Mr. Harlan Ellison there? Or
the original teleplay kind of City on the original teleplay of City on the Edge of Forever? You know, there's a reason why it was condensed the way it was to the movie that they had. I mean, that's the thing is people say, well, we want to see more. And then when they get it, they get this bloated story for them. And they're like, oh.
I didn't know it was like that.
You got to remember that there's this thing called creativity through adversity, and things like television runtimes, budgets, and etc. actually do make a more better, leaner, easier to digest story versus what sometimes these writers come up with on their first draft. I mean, you don't want to, you know, you don't want to pull away the curtain too much because to say, I want to see the original version of this, and you get the Star Wars.
Yeah. It's like, I can appreciate what Harlan Ellison's, what, you know, why he would feel the way he does about that, but eventually you gotta let it go. And I swear to God, anybody, don't start singing, Ben. Don't do it.
All right, well, moving on, we got some Image Comics. Nothing I would really read on Image Comics this week. I mean, Postal, no, I wouldn't read that. I haven't read Spawn. I mean, Jesus, you know, when I was a depressed teenager in the 90s, I still wouldn't touch Spawn.
Yeah, I always kind of liked that story, but I haven't honestly thought about Spawn in years. The only thing I could see in Image, this thing that I would recommend people check out, is Oddly Normal, which is a lot of fun. It's like this girl who's like half elf or something, and as much as the story is about this magical world that you know, she discovers, you know, about where she really comes from and her family and all that, I more enjoy just like the allegory of like this girl who is different, you know, in pretty much every way from all the other students, and how much it's just like, you know, how you feel like when you're picked on in school for being a little different, you know, because it's not like a huge thing. I got bullied a lot as a kid because, you know, I was overweight and I like comic books a little too much. And so I can kind of relate. And a story like this, you know, definitely worth checking out. Let's see what else we got here. Well, I'm just saying Marvel.
We got some, the new Ant-Man's okay. Well, it's not really the new Ant-Man. It's the old Ant-Man. That's the second Ant-Man. Not
because Eric O'Grady's dead. The irredeemable Ant-Man.
Yeah, Carol Danvers was his favorite.
I only had a shower.
We got some Miracle Man, because reading old comics excites people, I guess. We got some.
Got the Ant-Man movie prelude, which I like what they're doing with the Hank Pym of the Marvel Universe was active in like the 1950s and 60s as Ant-Man, but more or less as a government agent. So I don't know. I think that's a cool enough spin that they kind of keep the character, the original Hank Pym, like he's rooted in the era that he was originally created, at least when he was active, and then you move it up to the modern day where, you know, you can kind of finagle where Scott comes in. So, I don't know. What did you think about that change, Ben?
I think it's interesting because they did sort of play on the fact that there were superheroic activities. You know, it didn't just stop with Cap and then restart again with Tony Stark. You know, I sort of like the idea that when Cap happened, you know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe was forever changed. Speaking of Tony, Superior Iron Man irks me in many ways.
It's irksome?
For people who don't know, the story, it comes from the Axis storyline where all these heroes and villains get inverted to, like, opposite versions, versions of themselves. They're more,
it's opposite day, basically.
Their morals change, and you know, the funniest thing is that at the ending comic for Axis, they have this scene where Peter Parker is actually keeping his promise to
Carnage,
where he's building a rhinestone statue of Carnage to play Sweet Home Alabama in
Freebird. It was Freebird.
While shooting flames in Times Square of New York City.
Yeah. Oh, and then Sabretooth went from being like this savage killer with no remorse to getting in touch with his feelings. So now he's like the new Wolverine, kind of, sort of. And...
Oh, and the only person who didn't get...
Tony Stark's still a douchebag.
Well, what happened was Tony Stark got to the point where before he got shrapnel in his heart and learned his moral lesson, he sort of got back to that emotional point in his life.
Oh, and he's off the wagon now.
And he's wearing a suit that shows off his face because...
Why not?
And he has a sidekick now that's Kid... Team Abomination, and every time Tony Stark's about to do something evil, he tells him to go to the other room because it'll make him feel too much like a mad scientist to have, like...
Witness.
No, a monster sitting in a room while he does something.
Yeah, oh, and then and it's just like in the last issue of Superior, for those who haven't read it, spoilers, it turns out the Extremist 3.0... isn't an actual app. It's Tony Stark has poisoned the water supply of San Francisco, because originally he was going to put it in bottled water, but San Francisco has banned bottled water, and that in real life they've done that, and I still don't know why. But Daredevil kind of figured that out, and then Tony Stark basically, you know, messes up Daredevil so that he's going to be in the hospital for a while, which will allow him to complete whatever nefarious scheme he has.
He also gave Daredevil back his sight just to take it away.
Well, yeah, it lasted like a day or something. There's gangs of beautiful people roaming the streets of San Francisco. It's like, we're beautiful now because we've got this shit. We don't like the fact there's ugly people, so they start jacking, you know, beating up everybody who doesn't conform to this.
Just like real San Francisco.
I'll take your word for it.
Anyways, let's
Stark's a jerk.
Anyways, moving on, we have...
Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, number 2. Looking forward to it.
Yes, we also have... looking down, we have...
Famous Monsters of Film Lad still going. Love that magazine.
I'm going further down. It's... we got some more Doctor Who stuff from Titan Comics. You know, I'm starting to wane off Modern Who. I'll explain later.
TV shows. I have never... I tried just a little bit to keep up with the comics, and I decided I was better off not knowing. You know, it's, what else we got? No, Valiant's still going. It's just, did they end Archer and Armstrong, or is it just on a hiatus or something?
I think they ended it, but, you know, to tie this all up and finish the solicitations, we have J.T. Sabre, Zenoscope Entertainment.
Aw, man, you know me so well. And here I thought you were going to be silly and say that JT's favorite manga, Yu-Gi-Oh! Zexal. I tried watching that new animated series and, what's the word?
Abomination?
No, it's extreme annoyance. The only anime I have ever watched that I screamed abomination, and I really don't know why I screamed abomination, because it's plain to see the fact that this is crap, was I tried watching one of the newer episodes of the mini Beyblade series. And how do you make toy spinning tops epic?
How do you make tennis epic? I played tennis. It's not epic.
This is true. But yeah, that's the solicitations. So.
Yeah, well, when we come back, we'll have the topic of the show.
It's time for intermission, boys and girls.
Like animation? Come listen to Animation Aficionados.
And if you disagree with us, you could be a guest on a future show.
Available on iTunes, the Zune Market, and AnimationAficionados.com.
Hey, I'm Gary.
I'm Mike.
I'm Chuck.
And I'm Justin.
Join the four of us every week on the Internet's number one and longest-running G.I. Joe podcast, What's on Joe Mind?
It's Joe news, reviews, and interviews like you've never heard them before, delivered right to your MP3 player.
Our guests include Jason Marsden, Kevin Michael Richardson, and Matt Yang King from G.I. Joe Renegades, Larry Hama, Robert Adkins, and John Barber from IDW Publishing, and many more from around the online Joe community.
Yeah, it's guys talking about Joe. Think of it as Joe Talk meets Sports Talk. And we make fun of Chuck.
Right, and we... Hey, again?
Come on, Chuck. We're just kidding, kinda.
Sometimes Chuck makes fun of himself.
Right, and we... Okay, seriously, this is just getting ridiculous now.
It's What's on Joe Mind, every week on the GeekCast Radio Network, InsidePulse.com, Stitcher Smart Radio, and iTunes. Download and listen today.
I suppose I still can't say something about Transformers, can I?
Come on, man.
No.
What about sports?
That sounds good.
Yeah, that's all right.
It's action. It's drama. It's comedy. It's DeCian, the superhero webcomic. DeCian's got superhero antics and sexy girls. Read it now at DeCian.com. DASIEN.com.
And now, back to the show.
And we're back to talk about the Ultimate Universe. For people who don't know, to set the stage on the Ultimate Universe, it actually started with Ultimate Spider-Man. The concept was, in a nutshell, let's have a more condensed, reader-friendly universe for the new reader. Something that someone who doesn't need to know about, 30 years of continuity 40, to pick up and read. And like I said, it started with Brian Michael Bendis and
Mark Bagley.
Yes, and Ultimate Spider-Man. That was the first Ultimate title, and if you read the early interviews, the concept was, more youth-friendly titles of slightly different versions of the heroes we know that are, like, condensed to the inner core of what they mean to be. And then Mark Millar shows up.
Now, to be fair... And the first couple of volumes of the Ultimates.
I'm not talking. I think jumping into the Ultimates is a little too far. Let's go back to Ultimate Spidey. I loved Ultimate Spidey. There were some missteps here and there. Definitely, there were some places where they needed to, fix some things. But ultimately. Ultimate Spider-Man was an enjoyable ride. Red Ink?
I loved it. I even had a long-running theory about, after Peter Parker died. Spoiler alert.
Well, they kind of confirmed your theory.
What was that? My theory that he was actually a Carnage clone that died?
Yes.
Not the real Peter Parker?
Yes. Because they had the real Peter Parker show up again.
Yeah.
And
then they write him out.
Yes. Play him off, Keyboard Cat.
Yeah. No, I loved Ultimate Spider-Man 2. Like, one thing, it is the... I think Bendis and Bagley broke the record set by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby for number of issues consecutively on an ongoing title that the... Lee and Kirby previously had for Fantastic Four. What I loved the most about it was it brought one of my all-time favorite Spider-Man artists back to Spider-Man. Like, Mark Bagley is like top three all-time favorite Spider-Man artists.
Really?
Yeah. Like, there's something, because when I really started paying attention to Spider-Man comics in the 90s, and this is like a few years prior to the Clone Saga, like around the time Richard and Mary Parker returned and turned into Play-Doh, like robo clones sent by the Chameleon, and which were commissioned by Harry Osborn, Green Goblin, and all that. It's just that's when I really started paying attention to what I liked in art in comics. Is Bagley caught my eye? I liked Bagley's art because it's good, solid lines, carries the action. It's detailed without being overly detailed. Because as much as I liked McFarlane's Spider-Man with the spaghetti webbing and there's no possible way a body can contort like that while swinging, I enjoyed it. But Bagley took everything I liked about McFarlane and it was very refined and solid, and I just enjoyed it. This is what a comic book should look like. Like, this is one of the best examples I have ever seen of what I look like, where, like, was the jury where all these guys in, like, jacked up versions of the guardsman armor from the vault, you know, put Venom on trial. And this is, like, my favorite version of Venom was, like, you know, the slack jaw with the needle teeth and the long drilling tongue. I mean, that's what, how I like my Venom. And to have Bagley come back to Ult and take on Spider-Man again in this form was great. Now, granted, I think he had been out of practice for a while, because the first year or so of Ultimate Spider-Man, it was, you know, by at least the end of that first 12 or 13 issues, you know, he really got back in his groove. And that's what I really liked. And then you look over at, was that Andy or Adam Kubert that was working on Ultimate X-Men in the beginning?
I think it's Adam.
Yeah. Because I think Andy, he has the more kind of solid kind of style to his art. Like, that's the other thing I loved about Ultimate X-Men is, you know, it's, again, I've always loved all three Kuberts, like father and sons. But, you know, I really got into it. And that was, like, at a time where I was kind of waning on Spider-Man, like regular 616 Spidey, because that's where, you know, Mary Jane was thought to have been killed in, like, a bomb on an airplane. And they moved, they took Peter and put him back in, like, an apartment building with all the quirky neighbors and all that. And I was just kind of suffering from burnout, because it was only a couple of years, 2 or 3 years removed from, like, the actual end of the Clone Saga, where Ben Reilly finally died. And X-Men, I was kind of falling off of, like, again, the 616 stuff. But, you know, then you got these two titles of two of my favorite Marvel comics, like Ultimate X-Men and Ultimate Spidey. And I loved how they kind of, because this is basically Marvel's first attempt at a reboot, quote unquote, air quotes. Because, you know, it's, again, to bring in new readers and center the stories in the modern day, like having them start now and carry forward again without all that history. So, like, the reboot of X-Men, where, you know, Professor X is a lot more loose with using his mental telepathy to, like, you know, hypnotize and mind wipe people. You know, like, he's got, you see in the first couple of issues, I think it's Storm or Colossus asking about all these guys fixing up the mansion. And they're like, you know, if F-16 jet could fly down the hallway and all they would see is a buzzing bee. I was like, it's kind of an abuse of your powers there, isn't it, Charlie? And you move a few years down the line, one of the best things I liked about Ultimate X-Men is how the, I mean, years down the line past this, you find out the origin of mutants in the Ultimate Universe is essentially an, you know, illegal genetics experiment created, like, basically the U.S. government created mutants. And it's, I still don't know how that works. Like, they actually mutate people in a lab, and that's how we get Wolverine and a few other characters.
James
and
Howlett.
Somehow,
Lucky Jim.
James Howlett. Yeah. Lucky Jim Howlett. And somehow them genetically creating this in a lab, and it gets into the world. So it's essentially mutants are like a airborne virus, and eventually it works its way into the population. So now just, you know, it's not, so it's just in the human genome and mutant. It's, they couldn't just go with the fact that, you know, that if there's one thing that you don't fuck with in X-Men is how mutants happen. They're born with this extra gene that gives them superpowers. Bang, done. Comic book logic, it works. No. It's got to be created in the lab, and there's got to be this huge backstory if it's all connected. And but what I love, when I'll get off, stop ranting here. One of the things I love about X-Men is how they used Apocalypse, and where Mr. Sinister in the Ultimate Universe is this mutant with, he's this mentally deranged mutant with, like, these super hypnotism powers. And he talks to Apocalypse, and but they play with the idea that maybe Apocalypse is all in his head, or is he? And I always like that idea. Mm. I don't know, it's just.
And then Ultimate Cable is Wolverine.
Yeah, from the future.
Well, of course, from the future. But
from the future.
Ultimate X-Men, you know, I can take or leave. Honestly, my favorite scene in that was, now, Charles Xavier, meet your ultimate nemesis. Stairs. But overall, Ultimate X-Men, because, again, the whole Ultimates line was basically the 616 universe is a suggestion. you don't need to take the suggestion. And there were some things they did that I thought were kind of lame, like the way they handled Mysterio was kind of stupid.
Oh, that it was actually Quentin Beck from the 616 universe, and he fell backwards through a wormhole, and
yeah.
I mean, what the one thing I don't buy, like the way they did it, and the redesign is kind of cool, is where he's got this, you see this ghostly face and this bunch of swirling mist on his shoulders, and you know, fine, I get all that, and he's making a play to become like crime lord in New York City. Sure, why not? No, there is no flipping way that Quentin frickin' Beck, who probably weighs like $180, maybe, is going to take out Wilson fucking Fisk.
But he did.
I know, and I call bullshit.
A lot of people call it bullshit, but...
yeah.
But lots of things were introduced in the Ultimate Universe that sort of slowly leached into the regular 616 universe. Some took more time than not. I mean, it took us over 10 years to get a Black Nick Fury.
Oh, that was so shoehorned in, man.
Oh, it was terrible.
Everything else healed. Don't know why my eye didn't.
Lost my good eye.
Yeah. Oh, and they gave him back a cigar and a car. Oh, no, wait, they didn't. It's a giant piece of hickory jerky. That's how they gave back Nick Fury a quote-unquote cigar.
That's terrible. But other things that, I mean, I think Ultimate Spider-Man is like the testament of the best of the best, and it was the most purest distillation of what they wanted to do with the Ultimate Universe, because they did a much better distilled version of the Clone Saga. And then we had...
What, you mean it only lasted 6 months and it had a definitive ending?
Yeah.
Didn't really have a definitive ending.
Well, it stopped. The next issue didn't continue with the story. I mean, there wasn't a... You're right, there wasn't a conclusion, but at the same time, they didn't, you know, keep on bringing back the clones and the cloning villain over and over again. Yeah. I mean,
they brought back the clones. Gwen Stacy came back as a clone.
Well, that was a Carnage clone. Not a clone.
The some of the clones came back, but I mean, it's not like it was, you know, the next chapter of the Clone Saga. Like, they're now characters in this universe, and of course they'll come back.
It's not like every week there's the, you know, the Jackal's gonna come back again with another Gwen Stacy clone again. I mean, Jesus fucking Christ, stop it.
And see, you know, okay, like, I got one character, I want one reinvention that I love that they did, but I want to ask Red, what's some of the characters, like the reinventions in the Ultimate Marvel characters or concepts that you like? Because I haven't heard a lot from you.
Characters and concept that I like.
Jeez. Well, like the, you know, like, you know how they made Captain America's like more hardcore actual soldier than, you know, superhero.
I like how they made Cap a douchebag from the 1940s.
Yeah, just a little bit racist.
Yeah, like, he was not perfect. And he's basically how your parents would act, kind of. And Marvel got a lot of shit for that, but I'm glad that they did it.
Do you think this A stands for France?
Yeah.
Okay, how about this? And this kind of goes to both of you. What do you think of the idea that they made Ultimate Red Skull his illegitimate bastard son?
Oh, I thought that was dumb.
That was pretty dumb. I think the Ultimates line sort of peaked at volume two. I mean, some of the things I did enjoy, Hulk trying to eat Freddie Prinze Jr. I especially enjoyed.
And here's one: Hulk straight as he's clawing up the side of a skyscraper in New York City.
Honestly, Ultimates Volume 2 is sort of where Millar started losing me this person died. Now this person died. Now this person's a traitor. Now Hulk is actually a crazy guy, but he's not. Or is he? It started losing me really fucking quickly, and I started going to the point where I'm like...
It's like the
whole thing was... people felt like the Ultimate Universe... It felt like the writers felt like the Ultimate Universe was there very temporarily, and they're like, okay, we got to shoehorn as much shit as we can. We got to make as many stories as we can. Okay, we got to have this guy and this guy, this story. We got to mess up all this shit up. We got to do this. We got to do that. We got to have Hank Pym be the wife beater because he punched Janet that one time in that comic. You know, we got to do this. It felt like really, 0 to 100 with we got to pack shit in. And I think that's sort of like why I keep on gravitating back to Ultimate Spidey, because Bendis sort of like had a little bit more time, you know, had a little bit more purpose. I think another part of it is Millar just wrote the issues, and it took Brian Hitch fucking forever.
Yeah.
To draw. So, I mean, the thing is this: Hitch used to turn work on time. I mean, his work with Wade and JLA was on time, but here, yeah. Hitch was like, oh my god, it was taking for fucking ever.
And while that may be true, I want to say
Honestly, it wasn't. I mean, the thing is he was doing fucking Greg Land faces for a while.
I don't disagree. I think it was worth the wait.
Go through Ultimates Volume 1, and I promise you'll see a bunch of Greg Land faces in it, even though the artist says Brian Hitch. And speaking of Greg Land, let's talk about Ultimate Fantastic Four for a second.
I don't want to talk about Greg Land. Well, one good thing came out of Ultimate Fantastic Four, and that was...
Zombies?
No. After the whole ultimatum thing, when Reed Richards actually became a bad guy, that was a fucking awesome storyline.
Oh yeah, where he went, he's got like the scarred, melty face sort of thing, and he's got like the world ships around the world where times accelerate on the inside, so he's had like actually whole generations of like creations to like society and all that, and he's... Yeah, no, I thought that was an awesome thing, too. The one thing that... And this is one of the many... There's many things that puzzle me about the Ultimate Universe, like Nightcrawler becoming this crazed stalker, Stockholm Syndrome sort of thing for Dazzler at one point. The one thing I never understood, or maybe I just missed the issue of the comic where they explain it, where Ben Grimm... Like, basically, the Ultimate Fantastic Four get their powers in a freak transporter accident involving the negative zone, and they're basically, their minds stay in this universe, but their bodies are switched with bodies from like three universes to the left. And Ben Grimm, you know, it's the Rocky Ben Grimm, and he's getting, and you see more of him getting suicidal because now he's like, you know, early 20s and all that. And at one point, the rocks peel off his body, and he's got this glowy purple energy form underneath. And they say that the rocks were like a cocoon. Can anyone explain that?
It's basically Ultimate Wonder Man.
Didn't they have Ultimate Wonder Man?
The Ionic thing, Jesus Christ. Do I have to spell everything out right for you? Chew your food?
Yes, you do. No, that would just be creepy.
They never explained it. It was just, hey, I got a new form. Check me out.
Okay. That's the only explanation is no explanation. And another thing, like, I thought it was really cool because the one thing I didn't like that they changed in the Ultimate Universe is where it's not Galactus, it's the Galactus Swarm. And it's basically this cosmic-powered, you know, mecha roaches. And the Ultimate Vision is like this quasi-female robot sentience that goes from world to world that... trying to warn people about the Galactus Swarm. And then at the end, after the Age of Ultron, 616 Galactus shows up and everybody loses their shit. Because you'd think the Ultimate Universe has had cosmic problems before. No, they haven't had cosmic problems at all before this. You know, and you literally see it. And I mean, at this point in the Ultimate Comics, they've rebooted the Ultimate Marvel lines as not Ultimate Marvel, now it's Ultimate Comics. And Captain America's president, and the Triskelion is like this giant flying battleship, and Peter Parker has died, and Miles Morales has stepped up as the new Ultimate Spider-Man, and they trap Galactus in like a dead universe with Thor, who lost his powers, and now he's got like this battle. He's got like some sort of power armor that kind of replicates his powers. I mean, the end of that story, just I was really dissatisfied how they ended Cataclysm. I just love the idea that, you know, Galactus is here and he's going to ruin everybody's shit. Because by that point they did that, I really, aside from Miles Morales, Ultimate Spider-Man, I had kind of gone to, like, loathe the Ultimate comics. I mean, you know, they
well,
rebooted
let's
the
talk, Ultimates. Let's talk about Ultimate Doctor Doom, which, oh my god. So, Ultimate Doctor Doom, if you've seen the... If you've seen the movie with Nip Tuck guy there, it's the same thing. He got a metal infection, and his skin becomes metal, and he pukes. He gets goat legs, and he pukes stuff. Shut up, it's puberty.
He pukes poison gas. He can expel razor-sharp needles, and he created a swarm of killer robotic mosquitoes using Bluetooth.
And he has goat legs.
And didn't he explain that
sometimes?
No, the thing is Millar actually said he still had goat legs. He was just wearing armor that made it look like his goat legs were regular legs. He was wearing Torgo armor.
It's retarded.
Yes, it is.
And bonus points to people who get the reference.
Torgo.
You don't get a JTD. Okay, that's fine.
It's on the tip of my tongue. I know it'll be like 5 minutes after we're done recording. I'll be like, that's it.
The haunting Torgo theme, but moving on.
The one of the weirdest things that they mention it in the introduction to Ultimate Doctor Doom, and they never bring it up again, is that he is a direct blood descendant to Vlad Tepes.
I think they all know him as. I think they sort of play with that a little bit in the 616 universe too.
Yeah, but that's like a posse. He is of Romani blood in 616, so there's a possibility that he's, you know, related to the historical Dracula, not the Lord Dracula with the bleach white skin and long white ponytail. Now,
I'm pretty sure that Victor calls him Great Uncle in the 616 universe. I'm joking, but I think that'd be kind of funny.
Yeah. But the Ultimate Fantastic Four comic, they had some really cool ideas, and they really went with when it came to cosmic characters like the Silver Surfer, who's now the Silver Searcher, and the Cosmic Cube and Thanos. Like the whole Cosmic Cube and Thanos thing in Ultimate FF really will twist your nut, because it's essentially, I think the proper phrase would be a causality paradox, because they come across these aliens who escape from Thanos' dimension, and he's using the Cosmic Cube to rule over everything. And by the end of it, they've destroyed the cube, and Reed's trying to rebuild the cube. And a couple of storylines later, he tosses it through a wormhole, and that's how Thanos found the Cosmic Cube in the first place.
I think ultimately,
you went there, didn't you?
I did go there.
How many times are you going to do that?
I just think that, again, you know, it's these writers had like this, oh my god, I gotta hurry up, I gotta fit all this stuff in there. Well, yeah. Back to Spider-Man, it's like, you know, Bendis sort of took his time, does his thing, and it's like the rest of the universe sort of infected itself with, you know, got cancer up the ass with summer crossover event itis.
Yeah, I think with Ultimate Spider-Man is Bendis may have not had an end game in mind, but he had at least, he was four or five moves ahead, so he had like two or three complete storylines finished, and then he kept building from there, and yeah, like you said, took his time and made sure it all more or less made sense, which is why I think ultimately, that's why it's the strongest of like the both Spider-Man titles, like the Peter Parker and Miles Morales versions. They're the strongest because they have this solid backbone to them. Like they probably had like a series Bible, whereas everyone, like the Ultimates was done chapters at a time, which is one of the things that really annoyed me about them. And Ultimate X-Men for the longest time, as much as these were reinventions, just like Ultimate Spider-Man, I don't think anybody was really... They were texting while they were driving, is the best way to put it. Like, oh, sure, they stayed on the road, but no one was really paying attention.
Yes. You know, it's... I can't think of much else that really elevated Marvel as a whole. I mean, Ultimate Spider-Man was the breakaway, runaway title on there. The Ultimates, Volume 1 and 2, you know, Volume 2 had some hurry-up-itis into it. Volume 3 was a mess. We're not even going to go touch that. But like I said, Volume 2 was had hurry-up-itis into it. Got sucked up its own asshole.
I would argue that volumes, like, okay, I love the fact that through Volume 1 and 2 they really played with the idea, is Thor an actual god, or is he just this crazy person with some jacked up technology?
They sort of handled that with the bomb. The planet-destroying bomb, because if that was anywhere in the solar system, they were fucked.
Well, again, that's like one of those things, like, did he actually take it to another dimension, or did he just teleport on the other side of the galaxy?
They made it very clear. Is he teleported it somewhere that wasn't this realm? I mean, there was no mystery to it anymore, because they're like, because I kept going back to, they said, you know, the actual dialogue was, well, if this was teleported anywhere in the solar system, we would still be fucked.
What I'm saying, what's brilliant about that is they said all that and they kind of confirmed it, but they also, you just see it. It's like bright light and it's gone. You know, I'm not saying he didn't teleport, but you didn't know at the time, because he could have still just teleported it, you know, between dimensions or something, because that's what they say, because in Ultimates Volume 2, when Loki is, you know, tweaking reality and saying, you know, it's my brother and he's mentally ill and, you know, he's got a teleporter built into the hammer, you know, you honestly don't know, because they have that whole thing where, you know, they take Thor down and then they take Cap down, and it turns out that, you know, it's basically the ultimate version of the Masters of Evil, the Liberators, you know, stuff like that. And like I said, I think it was worth the wait for Brian Hitch. I mean, maybe it could have been better yet, but I mean, the best thing about Volume 2 was the sheer overall epic feel to the story. And then they finally, yes, Thor is an actual god, because you see the Rainbow Bridge and the Warriors of Asgard come down and start putting foot to ass on all the bad guys. And like, as much as I love Joe Madureira's art, Volume 3 was atrocious. But what I loved the most was Ultimates Volume 4, or the New Ultimates, 5-issue miniseries with some gorgeous art by Mr. Frank Cho.
I do enjoy some Cho. I think that outside of a few select titles, all of the Ultimate line has this hurry up itis in it that sort of killed it. It'd be better off if they only wanted to tell like two or three interesting stories without trying to tell two or three epic stories, because it felt like every time we came back to the Ultimates, here's an epic story, here's an epic story, here's an epic story. I want to have like a slowdown piece, you know, them having coffee or something, you know, maybe not exactly shawarma. That, but shawarma. It doesn't need to be crossover event, because it was Ultimate War with the X-Men versus the Ultimates, and then there was Ultimate, and then Ultimatum, and the Ultimate line killed itself with it, something that it was intended to be a more friendly title for youths that didn't want to be stuck with a burden of continuity, became this thing where you had to pick up every issue of a crossover event to know what the story was, with brutal, bloody decapitations and confusing storylines. I mean, they sort of defeated the purpose of the whole Ultimate Universe within 2 years. And yeah, again, going back to Bendis and Ultimate Spider-Man. I mean, Red, what do you think?
Oh, the Ultimates lineup, basically, there's a lot of hit and misses in there.
A lot of misses.
I loved Ultimate X-Men. I loved Ultimate Spider-Man. I loved some of the crossover events, like I mentioned, whatever, the one Reed Richards went evil there. But I think Ultimate X-Men, it was like nobody was paying attention when they were writing. Nobody gave a shit. People would come in there and ignore what happened previously and just make up their own bullshit.
That's exactly what happened. The same thing happened with Ultimates Volume 3. You know, Jeff Loeb ignored to have Ultimates Volume 1 and 2, wrote whatever he wanted to.
Because in Ultimate X-Men, like the first stories, the first few stories there, with the original artist and original writer, Wolverine was 6'2".
Wolverine was a pretty boy. He wasn't this gruff and rough guy. He was a pretty boy. He was drawn to be a young, pretty boy. And you know, somewhere down the line, they're like make him more like regular Wolverine. And then they had this whole thing where Jean Grey was like this pierced punk girl that they forgot immediately too. I know what you mean. It's there was no consistency because I think no one gave a fuck about Ultimate X-Men. It became a mess because nobody gave a fuck. And again, going back to Bendis, you know, he was the only one that really made his baby work.
Yeah, because I mean, they had stuff in Ultimate X-Men that the one thing that two things kind of bugged me, at least in those first few arcs, was they had the whole idea is like Professor Xavier was really fucking arrogant in that comic. Like he thought, you know, he knew what was best. He knew, you know, he's doing what he's doing. No one should ever question him because he fakes Magneto's death, mind whammies him, which is undone rather easily. You'd think for the most powerful telepathic mutant in the world, his work would stick a little bit better. And how the Brotherhood finds out about Magneto is by the fact that Beast can't keep it in his internet pants. Because he thinks he's having like this online romance with this like mutant chick or a human who, and it turns out to be the Blob, and the Blob isn't just look like a man with a serious weight problem though. This is like the most obese, disgusting version of an overweight human being possible.
Was he wearing a fedora? This
guy, yeah, like the face. Oh God, and. Yeah, so they do
posting on that, message boards, know, making stories.
He's basically a mutant. The Blob in the Ultimate Marvel Universe is like a superpowered version of that fat nerd that was kicking everyone's ass in that Warcraft episode of South Park. That's pretty much what he was.
How can you kill what has no life?
Yeah. It's just, it gets on from there. It's, yeah, they jumped all over the mat. Now, if anything, is there, what do you think
Ultimate Spider-Man Beast, Hank McCoy was sexting with the Blob.
The Blob. That's what's going on.
And I said, hey.
How you doing?
Hey. What's going on? I cried.
Oh, did you cry? The one thing I want to ask you, Red, is there anything outside of Ultimate X-Men, is there anything that struck you as off the rails, as like as bad as Ultimate X-Men? Was there anything else in the Ultimate Marvel Universe that you thought was equally as what the fuck?
Well, we'll go back to the storyline with Evil Reed Richards. They set it up that he was basically going to win. He was going to fuck up the entire universe and there's nothing they can do about it. And then I think the staff changed, like the writer and the artist changed.
Yes, they did. Because
that's what Marvel does for some fucking dumbass reason. And the next issue, they solved it with Sue Storm just, hey, what's up, Reed? And then she fucking puts him in a bubble. It's over. That was the biggest fucking letdown ever in a recent comic book that I can think of.
Like, it's not even like she threatened to put like an oxygen bubble in his blood, like in his blood flow or anything like that. Because, you can't actually kill Reed Richards in the Ultimate Universe because now he's just like a giant stack of protoplasm. And that's how they explain him stretching.
Yes, anyways...
Okay, that's... so besides Reed, I just want to pick Red Grannis for another second. Is there anything in the Ultimate Spider-Man that you think was like, you know, WTF?
The Ultimate Spider-Man, like, I haven't read them for a while, so.
Okay.
But I have to think the Venom arc is what I don't really like.
The Venom arc was rushed. It was like, we need to do a Venom arc. Here's Venom.
We need Venom. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Carnage right after.
Honestly, the Venom, the whole symbiote thing, these are like cancer-curing suits thing, was done mainly so Bendis could check off the check marks of fans want this, I'm going to show them my version of this, okay, I'm done, let's get back to the storyline I was trying to tell. That's what it felt like to me, because I don't think he was really invested in it.
Now, the one thing I think with the Venom thing, that it's not so much the storyline, like how they ended it, you know, with him like disappearing in Flash, and he's probably still out there. You know, I liked how they ended that. What I don't like is they never explained how Eddie survived. Like they never, it's just he shows up a while later, and what's that?
To the game.
Oh, okay. So I've never finished that game, obviously. So, okay, they had that. I think the only other WTF thing is why can't the Green Goblin just bloody die?
Because he's immortal. They explained it recently that he's immortal. He can't be killed.
Okay, see. Besides the Ultimate Spider-Man comics, I kind of stopped after a while.
But they're also hinting that, like, my theory isn't correct, they're hinting that Peter Parker is immortal too. Like, to explain the one what the fuck moment, and that's from the video game, not from the comics themselves. In the video game, spoiler alert, if you haven't played the video game, I'm about to spoil something for you. When it was first created, that video game, Bendis swore up and down that this game was canon. It was going to be part of the ongoing storyline. Then the fans figured something out, and then he abandoned it. He said, no, it's not canon anymore. The story's progressed, and we've left that behind. Sorry, it's not canon. What the fans figured out is there's a moment when Spider-Man's captured by Silver Sable.
Yes.
And they start experimenting on Spider-Man. They take his blood samples and a bunch of different shit and put stuff in his blood. Suddenly, Carnage is there for no reason at all.
I love how you say that.
So Carnage is there, and you play as Carnage. And basically, every fan that played the game figured out Peter Parker's Carnage. Because in a previous storyline, we're saying a year before this game was created and written, they had the Clone Saga. And the end of that Clone Saga is an exact mirror of the original Clone Saga from 616. It's Peter Parker has the clone, and he throws it into a smokestack. That's it. That's all you see. Then he comes back, and he talks to Mary Jane. Mary Jane asks him, is it done? Is the clone gone? And he's like, yeah.
It's done.
It's done, yeah. So basically, in the 616 universe, they changed it so he was about to put Ben Reilly into the smokestack, and then they fought again. Then he puts him in the smokestack. It ends up Ben Reilly is the one who threw away the real Peter Parker. So once again, you have the exact same thing where there's a switch that was off screen. And then fans that played the game figured out, well, the Carnage clone is back, and it's Peter Parker. So that's the what the fuck moment of my comic. Of the whole Ultimate Universe. Is that was retcon that Peter Parker wasn't the Carnage clone. And my whole theory that when Peter Parker died, it was a Carnage clone.
Yes. That
Peter Parker had been switched, just like in the video game, and then when he died, that was his clone. It wasn't the actual Peter Parker. But now, like I said, they're saying that the Green Goblin is immortal, and they're hinting that Peter Parker is also immortal.
Well, at least for another few months.
Yeah.
Until the universe blows up. But, you know, I think that's a good point,
too. Okay, and just to Red's reasoning there, Ben, sorry to interrupt, I quote Young Frankenstein, it could work. Holy shit, that works.
And I love how it says, for no reason. Referencing one of my favorite episodes of Futurama. The one that proves that for all of Philip J. Fry's faults, he actually is pretty damn clever, even if he can't spell. Because the plan itself was brilliant. It's just, the fact that he can't spell doesn't mean that the plan wasn't brilliant.
Yeah.
But now we're really digressing, but I think we've said what we needed to say about the Ultimate Universe. This is your host, Ben.
JT from Saskatoon.
Red Ink.
And we're saying goodnight.
So long.
Peace out.
I sent you something.